Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Premiere of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers back together here in our Town Fair Tire studios as we welcome you to another season. Bruins just days away from their season opener against Dallas on Thursday night out on the road. And their final preseason game coming up this afternoon at the Garden. The guys will actually have the call here this afternoon at 3 o'clock on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Gentlemen, good to see you.
Good to be back. Starting up quick.
Feels like it hasn't been very long. Huh?
Let's go. Three-week camp.
Thursday.
Get the trip started.
Get this one done today.
It is amazing how short that off season feels. I said earlier this morning, you know, I was talking to Hardy and I said, it feels like game seven was 3 weeks ago. It flew by. It doesn't feel like it should be time for hockey season to get underway already.
Well, is part of that because of the way that it ended?
Yeah. Still fresh.
Because it still lingers in you. And I think in talking to a lot of the players and certainly personnel around the Bruins as they get set for the 2019-20 campaign, I don't think anybody's over it, but they've gotten by it, through it, and they've gotten beyond it.
Well, their play will dictate that. I mean, it has been a theme that, look, it left a pretty sour taste in their mouth. They were good after they lost to Chicago that year. Somebody asked me if there's going to be a Stanley Cup hangover. I said, well, if they had won, maybe. You know, mm-hmm. I don't see that being an issue. I think they're going to be extremely motivated. That's the way it seems like anyhow. Injuries could derail that. And, you know, we've already had some lingering stuff from last season and kind of linger here into camp where guys are maybe a little bit behind their training schedule or, you know, Bergeron's going to hopefully play his first game here today. Krejci had an injury the other day. We'll see where his situation is. You know, Nordstrom's still hampered with something. So that always can be a part of it. And the wear and tear of the season, the past season, can, you know, linger into this year. But I don't think the motivation is going to be a factor. You know, I think that there are other factors that could seep in.
But. Well, and with this group, motivation generally is not a factor. Like, you don't have to worry about, because of the leadership of this team, the professionalism of this team. I don't think anybody really questions that coming in. But you mentioned the loss to Chicago. There's a lot of mileage on some of these guys since that happened. All right. I mean, they're older. They're still playing at a top level, clearly. But as you advance a little bit, further in age, coming back every year becomes a little bit harder. And when you've had a short off season and you went through the grind that they had to go through just to get to the final, the motivation is great, but is the body going to be as willing as, and able as you'd hope it would be?
Well, it's one of the reasons why it was so important to get, you know, McAvoy and Carlo locked up, and we'll even take it to Danton Heinen. You know, these guys, this is your next wave. You know, Pastrnak, this is the next wave. These guys need to take, you know, a real, they took good steps last year, but now they need to take even more steps and become, and they're going to be counted on a lot. And this is, you know, as you're passing the torch, so to speak, and it's still not happening quite yet, but it's getting there. Mm-hmm. That's why the importance of these guys coming through and their development and their impact and what, you know, how important that's going to be here moving forward.
I think that's been a big part of the push here for the Bruins really in the last 2 years, is the way that a lot of their young players have played along with the core. But I think for teams that have gone deep consistently, it's the physical and the emotional taxation that it takes. What do you have left? What can you bring, you know, across what's going to be a huge grind? You're going to start here in October and again try and play until mid-June.
You know, from that standpoint, do you expect to see Bruce Cassidy handle things any differently this year? Does he, you know, think about giving guys a little breather mid-season? Does he pull back? Not like you're going to put a guy on IR for a month or something like that, but do we see guys getting even more maintenance days? Do we see the whole team getting more days without practice? How does his approach have to change, especially early on in the season, knowing that his team might need a little bit of extra rest?
No, I think that's very much part of it. And depending on who the player is, you know, maintenance days, practice, just, you know, I think for some guys, they want it, they need it. For other guys at this point, you know, it could be a little bit overkill. So, yeah, I expect to see some of that, but I think we've seen a lot of that already. Mm-hmm. I think that they've done that already, and whether it's the whole team or whether it's just certain guys. But I also think that they're in game stuff, how guys are used in game, or how you can maybe kind of less taxing type of minutes. I think the emergence of Charlie Coyle, or the addition, I should say, of Charlie Coyle does a lot for Bergeron. You remember when they brought in David Backes? One of the things they said was they wanted to try to ease Bergeron's burden, mm-hmm. you know, for lack of a better word. So if you've got four real good centermen, which I think they do right now, if you add Corrali into that mix as their fourth line center, if they go that direction, you know, they can do that. Backes never emerged as that center that could take some time off. And so going into last year, even, we were saying, okay, they need a third-line center, right? So they bring in Coyle. They add him at the deadline. I think that really can go a long way. And maybe, you know, you've got lines that you can trust, so you're not always counting. Bergeron line's got to go. He's got to go. He's got to go. So we'll see. I mean, I think in theory that's part of it. And it's not just Bergeron, but on the back end, you know, I mean, you're going to see a lot of McAvoy and Carlo out there. And over on the other side, you know, it kind of depends on the situation of the game.
I keep thinking back to the first half in each of the last 2 years for the Bruins and how ravaged they have been by injuries and how much they have had to push heading into New Year's Eve. And then they would catch fire in January and then roll. Last year, what, 49 wins after a team that was decimated on the blue line to be able to get there. It's going to be hard to just make the playoffs, whether it's the East or the West. And I think the East is going to be a lot more competitive than the Western Conference. And the West is still going to be good, don't get me wrong. But if you look in the Atlantic in particular, Tampa, Toronto, Florida should be better. You've got the Bruins. What are you going to see from Montreal or Buffalo? I don't necessarily think that they're going to be in the playoffs. They could potentially be in the picture. But you've got some tougher teams in the Metropolitan Division. So, you know, when you talk about rest, some of that will be dictated by the way that you start.
Sure. And look, we've seen that in the past, right? Where, you know, the team gets into a little bit of a swoon early on. And now, as you said, they got to really push for it. They can't let it get away from them. And we've seen them respond to that, but that also can affect the plans. It can affect, you know, who you're throwing in goal on a nightly basis. It can affect minutes. We've talked for years about trying to manage Zdeno Chara in particular. You know, that's something that is a lot easier to do when things are going well and you can say, okay, well, we can, you know, we can ease him off a little bit, not give him.
That, you see that anyhow.
Sure.
Just like I said, that more than anything depends on the situation of the game. If they're down a goal, you're not going to see as much of 33 out there. If they're up by a goal, you're going to see a lot of them. So it just depends on the situation. And, you know, so many games are close, right? So many games are close. So one goal games, you look at right down the line, you can even add empty net goals in there. So they're really close up right down the wire, but you won't see them as much if they're down a goal, right? I mean, you're going to see a lot more of Grizzlick and Krug on the left side. So, I mean, I think that stands to reason. So, they can do that and they can manage minutes that way. But if you're always protecting a lead, mm-hmm. you're going to see a lot more of them.
As far as the offseason goes, fairly quiet, which is, I think, pretty smart, pretty expected, considering what the team that you had coming back around. Were there any, I won't say surprises, but I think the biggest storyline of the offseason was the Carlo and McAvoy contracts, and they got those locked up early in camp, which was a huge
thing. Yeah, I didn't want to see that linger.
Yeah.
You know, we saw William Nylander linger last year, and he never got caught back up. And I think the longer they linger, I think it's important to have a camp, you know, and to be part of most of it. So having those two guys in camp and playing and getting in some reps, I think really important for them. So yeah, a couple of additions right in the offseason. I mean, they lose Noel Achari, they lose Johansson, you know, and that's a big loss. They, both of them are, you know, but Achari was heart and soul, played hard all the time. They added Richie and Lindholm. Lindholm played a good game the other day. It's a very small sample size, as I don't know the player that well, but just watching him the other day, he was playing alongside Bjork and Backes, and that line was excellent. All game, you know, they generated a ton of scoring chances. They finally broke through in the third period. So that, I was impressed with what I saw from him. It looked like a good two-way game. And Richie, I've only seen play once in a Bruins uniform. So I need to see a little bit more from him.
I think Lindholm is an intriguing player just because of the way he ended his career playing in Sweden, where he was playing top-line minutes and he was playing with a lot of skilled players. And talking to him in camp, he realized coming over to the National Hockey League, A, it's the best league in the world, to just make the team, he said, was going to be my goal. And he didn't expect playing in Toronto that he was going to see top 9 minutes considering the guys that they had populating those first three lines. So he was just trying to make the team. Obviously, he would like an opportunity if presented, but right now he's just, I think in talking to him, he was focused on just making the team, being as productive as possible. But he's a guy that bears watching. If you play him with some skill players, elevate his minutes, playing in some different roles, can you bring out some of the offense that maybe you saw at the tail end of his career when he was playing in Sweden?
We'll talk a little bit more about those guys as well as some guys that we know a little bit that have been in the pipeline, have had some chances here, that are looking to make this squad as well. As we take you up until 11 o'clock this morning, we'll get into your phone call, 617-779-0985, as we get started on another season of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Shoots and left, flashed up the glove, take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub, and streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Six one seven 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 nine zero ninety eight five. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you as we kick off another season. But is it really hockey season until we talk to Maria in Watertown? She gets us started this morning. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. Happy start of hockey season. I hope you guys all had a good summer.
We did. Hope you did as well. Ready to go, though.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm cautiously optimistic about the upcoming season. A couple of things that, you know, I know that I'm going to be looking for with regard to some of the players is watching and hoping that Brandon Carlo takes that next step and next jump to developing a little bit more aggressiveness to his game. I think he's very, very capable of it. I think from what I've heard in interviews, he's aware that he needs to make these strides, but I think that would go a long way to the success of the Bruins on the back end to see him play with a little bit more snarl and have guys be a little bit aware that if you're coming into the corner when he's out there, you're potentially going to pay the price. And I'd like to see a little bit more offense coming out of his game. And I also want to give Don Sweeney and Brandon Carlo and Charlie McAvoy and their contingent credit for working with the Bruins and getting these deals signed within their cap constraints, which I frankly didn't think it would happen. And I'm amazed that it happened and happy that it happened, even with still, you know, the Backus contract looming over Don Sweeney's head, which I'm not really sure how he's going to solve that. But I would like Bruins fans to stop blaming David Backus for his contract. He was offered that contract. He accepted that contract. And if I were him, I wouldn't just walk away from that kind of money.
No, nobody
needs to be. Yeah. Can't do it.
No, I appreciate the phone call as always, Maria, and we'll look forward to talking to you throughout the season. To the point of the team-friendly contracts, you know, McAvoy signs, gets 4.9 a year. Carlo gets 2.85 for the next couple of years. And I think the most interesting of those two is that they're still restricted free agents at the end of those deals, which, you know, certainly helps things out as well if you're looking at the long term. But being able to fit both of those guys in with manageable numbers was really key, because you didn't want to have to jettison somebody that you really need on this team in order to make room for your young guys to start getting paid.
Yeah, well, the important part for that, for the player, though, as well, is for example, the third year of McAvoy's contract is 7.3. So mm-hmm. That's where he starts on the next one.
Right. As far as actual payment that year, right?
Yes.
Like, yes.
But when the Bruins have to tender him a qualifying offer, it's got to start
with that. It's based on the 7.3.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Not the 4.9. So in that regard, you know, and the same thing for Carlo, just to a little lesser extent. And it seems like a lot of the guys are doing that now. I mean, Line A did that with his contract. I know Werenski did it. He might have been the one that started it. I'm not sure. But, you know, and that kind of prompted everybody else to kind of get done. There's still a couple guys out there. But Tkachuk, same way. So the third year or the last year of their deal is pretty high, so that's their starting point for the next one.
So that's the push-pull. So this gives the Bruins some flexibility to be able to look ahead, okay, what do we do going forward? And obviously we've jumped basically to next summer, talking about Krug, Coyle, and DeBrusk,
right,
trying to get those guys done. So that's a push-pull. This gives the Bruins an opportunity to try and get everybody back in the fold, but at the same time, I think Don Sweeney, the phrase that he uses, that this gives both Carlo and McAvoy, and maybe more so for McAvoy because he has a lot more offensive upside to his game than a guy like Brandon Carlo, this gives him a contract and a springboard to really cash in if he's able to produce the way that he and the Bruins hope that he's able to do on the ice.
I understand it's a different, you know, dynamic because these guys are young, they're coming off their rookie deals, they're restricted free agents, but how much does the culture of this team and kind of the fact that so many of these veteran guys have taken what is essentially below market value deals? I mean, you know, if you look at what, you know, what Brad Marchand is getting paid, it feels like, you know, that's a bargain at $6.1 million. Patrice Bergeron would be in the same boat. I mean, these guys,
Pasternak,
you know, Pasternak, certainly at, you know, 6 2/3 or whatever it is. That you've got a lot of guys on this team that have, you know, given back a little bit of a hometown discount because they want to be a part of that. How much do you think that trickles down to the younger guys on this team?
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, I think, you know, agents get involved and the NHLPA gets involved and, you know, they get in their ears saying, hey, you know, you know, here's your comparables. You make sure you get this. So, I mean, it just depends on the personality of the player. And
I mean, we see what's going on in Toronto.
Well, I think it's really important to treat your players in a certain way. And I think that they've tried to do that with the culture here. And, you know, it's become a strong locker room. And, you know, so it goes a long way into telling players, or having players say, this is where I want to be. You mentioned a couple guys. And that are come up for contract, but it's a long list actually. it's not just, you know, Krug and Coyle. I mean, those are unrestricted free agents to be. But, you know, I'll go right down the list. I mean, you got Wagner, you got Nordstrom, you got Jake DeBrus is a restricted free agent. Krug, you mentioned. Kevin Miller's going to be an unrestricted free agent. Char will be up for who knows what that situation will mean. Matt Grizzlick's a restricted free agent. It's become a very important part of this team. There's a number of players who are up. Halak, you know, if you go in that direction as well.
Sure.
You know, so there's still a lot of – there's every summer, every offseason, there's a lot of work to be done, and they try to do it, I'm sure, throughout the season. But it's even though Donnie Sweeney got everybody signed for this year, it starts up again quick.
Well, and we talk about windows with certain guys based on their age, but I think in some ways you have to do – you have to look at certain teams, whether it's the Bruins or I think it's some other teams in the Atlantic Division, Toronto, Tampa, just based on the window on the salary cap structure that they have in place for Toronto and
Toronto's
Tampa.
Got-
It's they have to win now based on, you know, because they are going to shed some players. It's just going to happen.
Would you say that Toronto had one defenseman under contract?
Morgan Riley. one defenseman. And Tampa's in a similar spot because they have some contracts that are going to kick in, and they have some guys that they need to sign. So this is probably the last year that the group you're going to see for Tampa is going to be on the ice together, just based on the contracts that they've signed. And there are a lot of guys that probably took some discounts there as well, but it's still obviously a very high salary. I mean, Steven Stamkos, I remember his contract here within the last couple of years. A lot of people were talking about what that number was going to be. He signed for a number far less than some of the guys got in Toronto. But I think one last thing, though, Ryan, since we're kind of looking ahead to this season and we've sort of worked around the fringes, a lot of the success last season was about what the core was able to do. I think for any team around the National Hockey League, the guys who are logging the most minutes, what kind of seasons are they having? Bergeron, even with the injury, career year. Pasternak, career total in goals. Marchand, 100 points, career high. Torrey Krug, monster numbers for the team. Tuukka Rask, rested in part. You had terrific goaltending. You had the tandem there. So both of those guys had great seasons. But I think for the Bruins, if you want to focus on this season, looking ahead to what it's going to be like for the Bruins in 1920, and David Krejci, I left him out, tied his career high with 73 points, which he originally sent in 08-09. Can those guys produce the same type of numbers, the same type of productions in the same type of roles?
617-779-0985. We'll continue to take your calls throughout today. We got Judd and Bob in studio with us, and Ty Anderson will join the party coming up next as we get started on another season of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
It's a black and gold freight train. Freight train. Freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show season premiere. We take you up until 11 o'clock here every Saturday morning throughout the hockey season, 9 until 11. Ryan Johnston joined by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers. And now we welcome in Ty Anderson of 98.5 The Sports Hub, going to be a regular contributor with us this year as well. Morning.
What's going on?
Are you ready for a hockey season?
I'm absolutely ready. I think as soon as you're back at camp and you see the preseason games, you're like, okay, it's time. Move on from last year's run. Let's go. I'm ready.
Wow, you just like dead and buried. Put it behind you. Bill Belichick school. Just we don't talk about last year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't know how Judd and Bob feel about this, but I hit the point in August where I'm like, what is my purpose in life? I really feel like I need to be at the hockey rink. So I think that's kind of where I am right now.
Did you guys hit that wall? Somebody said
to me the other day, they said, you know, you look forward to camp. You can't wait for camp to start, and then you can't wait to get it over with and start the regular season. So I think that's the point they're at right now. So finally, the last exhibition game this afternoon.
Yeah, I don't know if I hit that, you know, when I was up in Maine or maybe up in Vermont or hanging out or just enjoying some family time. So I wasn't quite there yet.
Judd is
out on a
trail in the middle of nowhere overlooking a beautiful vista, and he thought, I really want to be at Warrior Arena right now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when I was mountain biking Blue Hills. Get me to Warrior now.
Coming into this season, what's your number one storyline on this team?
I think it's the same thing as last year, right? Who plays second line right wing? I think you saw David Krejci, the way he played last year. He can still be an effective player in this league, clearly. He tied a career high in points, as you guys mentioned earlier. But I think that stability on that right side could really go a long way for that line. Keep in mind, Jake DeBrusk was pretty quiet for almost half the season last year. And then he was white hot for the remainder of it. So if you can stabilize that right side, I think it makes a world of difference in this team. But I still like them because they're strong down the middle and they have two good goaltenders. And I think when you have that, you compete in this league.
This has become, I mean, this was the question we asked all of last year, right?
As well as third line center.
As well as third line center, which, as you brought up earlier with Coyle, they've found their guy, it looks like, at that spot. So, but, you know, they come into this year, and again, that's kind of the biggest question mark on this team. Do they have someone in the organization that anybody here is confident can fill that role on a regular basis?
Well, I mean, look at the names right now. And you got Pastrnak, so go beyond him. Now, the other candidates go from Backes to Kuhlman to Richie,
Wagner,
Anders Bjork, Wagner, Heinen, Charlie Coyle, even if you want to go that route. It's not ideal, so you want to keep Coyle in the middle. I don't know who emerges on that right side, and some of them are naturally, or I think, a little bit better on the left side. But, you know, who emerges out of that group? And they've got to hope somebody by committee does. And I believe that that's – I think that they're hoping that somebody emerges out of that handful of guys, and probably a smaller list than that.
You know, it's interesting with a guy like Anders Bjork, because each of the last 2 years he's made the team out of training camp, certainly has that opportunity now. Especially because Joakim Nordstrom is on the shelf and we don't know what his status is going forward. But this year, the Bruins have played him on his strong side primarily, or that's what they've wanted from him.
He looked great the other night.
Not playing on his offside.
Great game. I mean, him, Lindholm, and Backes, I mean, they dominated in that game.
And
it's a preseason game, I get it, so I don't want to get too excited, but they look good.
And I wonder what sort of the difference it's going to be for him. One of the things that the coaching staff talked about is because he's on the left side, he can go a little bit deeper into the zone, that he got so used to maybe being in college and dominating because of his speed, flying up the right side and cutting into the middle. But we've seen him get popped a couple of times doing that. And maybe being on his strong side will actually bring out the most in his game. He can always move over to the right side. You know he can play it if you need him to. But being on the left might coax a little bit more offense out of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And when Beers is talking about that list, right, the list of guys they have on the right side, it's all limited samples in terms of what they've done. I like the Kuhlman sample, but it's only 100 minutes, I think, between the regular season and the postseason. You need to see more of it to know if it's sustainable or not. I think that he should get the nod out of training camp. I don't know if it's going to work, though. And then that's when you're back to sort of last year, that revolving door. Is it Richie? We didn't get to see any of Richie, Krejci, and DeBrusk in the preseason game against Philadelphia because Krejci was injured 2 minutes into the game. So That's a question mark there. I like Bjork on the left side. I think to you guys' point, he's been dominant there in the preseason. I looked it up the other day. They're over doubling up opponents in terms of shots when he's on the ice in this preseason. Clearly, they found something that works on that left side, and I want to keep him there right now. I don't want to move him back to the right side. So they have some things to figure out, just like last year. The one thing that is figured out is third line center, and that can make a world of difference, as we learned last year. For those first 40 games where they had JFK, Frederick, you know, they tried Backes there for a hot minute again. So having that should help, but it's still the biggest question on this team, like it has been for what feels like a half a decade now.
Well, one, I kind of want to underscore that because I think you had asked, Ty, okay, what's the biggest storyline heading into this season? Because of the injury that David Krejci sustained on Monday playing against the Philadelphia Flyers, I do think that bears watching. He's probably not going to play today here against the Blackhawks. So what's he like when he gets back on the ice? I think Bruce Cassidy said he's supposed to skate Sunday or Monday. Probably it's going to be Monday. Does he start with the team? And then what does his production look like? Is it just, I mean, Bruce Cassidy said it didn't sound like something to be concerned about. But let's see how that plays out once the road trip starts and you head into the meat grinder heading in out west against Dallas and the other teams that you're going to face here on the road. If he's fine and he's set, then I agree. Right wing, second line is probably your primary story.
Yeah. You know, Cassidy, when he says everything's going to be fine, it's like the kiss of death now. He said it about Kevin Miller.
Oh, yeah.
And then we never saw him again. Yeah, exactly. He says it now. I'm like, oh, no, here we go.
Dr. Cassidy.
he's trying to be reassuring, Ty. Like, that's what, you know, he's trying to make everybody feel better. Now, you're going to take that away from us.
He tries to make us too happy sometimes, I think, and then I get nervous.
So of that group, do you have one that, I mean, you said you think Kuhlman should at least get that role to start the season and see where it goes.
Yeah, I thought they had a great game last year against Columbus. And again, it's a really small sample size, but they had that late regular season game against Columbus where they put Kuhlman with Krejci and DeBrusk. I thought it was a fantastic line. Cassie actually referenced that game when he was asked about it. Why do you think Kuhlman could work there? And the playoffs, it was a bit trickier because it was game 6 and 7 of the Stanley Cup final. You know, you really can't give him all that much rope in that scenario. I think it should go to him. Brett Ritchie, I watch him and I see more fourth liner than I do second liner. I think he can be a good Nolan Chara placement, but I don't think he's going to score goals. I think that's a Jimmy Hayes, Matt Bellesi kind of thing all over again. Maybe even a little bit worse considering his limited sort of offensive upside. So I would prefer Kuhlman there. A
lot less money, though.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a total Benoit Pouliot kind of low risk, high reward kind of signing, which
won't take the heat from the fans because he's got the big contract.
Exactly. So I like the idea of it, but I kind of want to give it to one of the more offensively gifted players.
Well, since you brought up Carson Kuhlman and you're talking about sample size, if you look across a bigger sample size, even when he was in college, 13 goals was his career high in 44 games his last season at Minnesota Duluth. I think that's the big concern for the Bruins is across an 82 game slate. Is he going to be able to provide you with enough consistent offensive numbers? He's a smart player. He's got a high motor. He makes the right decisions at the right times. He's not afraid to go to the hard areas of the ice. That's the big question. I still think, going back to Bob's point with Charlie Coyle, I think long range, if a guy like Lindholm, if Par Lindholm can get some traction in his game and play the middle, then Coyle can move to the right side, and you can either flip-flop David Pastrnak or Charlie Coyle on the right side with Bergeron and Krejci.
Yeah, and some of that, Lindholm, Corrali, you know, those are centermen. I mean, it depends on that. You know, if they find something from Lindholm, or, you know, and he can slot in there, or he slots in fourth. Either way, you know, that's why I throw Coyle's name in there, and I know that they, you know, went back and forth on it a little bit, and they want to try to settle with the Knights' depth that they have in the middle right now. I mean, it's pretty strong four centermen that they have up the middle, and if your strength is, you know, you're building from, you know, your defensive core and the way you play in that way, and then your centermen who Bruce Cassidy, they rely a lot on in the defensive scheme, especially in their own zone. I mean, these guys can all do that. They've all proven that they can do that. So, I mean, that gives him. It gives him security in any line that he puts out there where he's got confidence in that centerman.
Ty Anderson is joining us in studio. We'll continue with him coming up as we continue on the season premiere of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Score! The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Chud Surratt, Bob Beers back with you for another season. We are joined by Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com as well. He is in studio with us for the next few minutes. We'll get to your calls coming up here at 617-779-0985. We were talking a little bit earlier about the contracts, Carlo and McAvoy getting, you know, their contracts taken care of early in camp and how big that is for this team, especially kind of, you know, you're coming off of this long season, short off season. Guys are, you know, still trying to get back into the mix. You got, you know, Kevin Miller still, you know, dealing with things. You got, you know, you're not, this team isn't 100% healthy going into training camp. So getting those guys back right away, and making sure that they're locked up and it looks like, you know, they're set to potentially be here for the long term is so big for this team because you need those guys to produce right off the bat this year.
Yeah, and it was huge because I thought that you'd be lucky to get them at a combined $9 million before the playoffs began. The playoffs happened, I thought, oh, geez, might be closer to 10. They get them under 8, and that's phenomenal. That maintains flexibility within your roster, but also it avoids you having to play Alex, you know, Petrovic in your top four potentially, you know, in game one of the regular season, which again, he's a fine depth piece, but you want to avoid that kind of situation. Having this bleed over into the regular season, kind of like what happened with Nylander, is not something that this team, I think, could have afforded, given those things you mentioned, the fatigue, the overall Stanley Cup hangover that we know is going to happen probably out of the gate. It's natural. It happens for almost every team. So to get those guys back, and I thought that, you know, they're playing again, which is huge. You know, they get the preseason games under their belt. Massive, massive boost for this team, and Don Sweeney deserves a lot of credit for getting those guys signed to those deals.
How concerned, if at all, should we be about things like Patrice Bergeron coming in, you know, still dealing with kind of nagging groin injury from last year? You know, Krejci obviously getting hurt the other night as a, you know, throws a little bit of a question mark into things as well. But, you know, those types of things, as these guys, you know, continue to get a little bit older and a lot of mileage on those tires, you kind of expect these things, but they're so important to the health of this team, you know, and how far this team is going to be able to go.
100%. And the Bergeron thing, it seems like it's chronic at this point, right? He's going to always battle this groin injury. It just seems like that's how it's going to be. Last year, he took a ton of optionals and maintenance days, and probably more than he's ever taken. You know, he's a guy who's always on the ice, but he's realizing that he has to manage this. That this is always going to be there. They're always going to have to manage it. And that's why having Coyle and Corrali, these elevated roles that they've skated in, is huge for this team right now, because it eases the burden.
Yeah, and the burden, and you asked, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about how you can do that. So in-game stuff, how many times did we see Corrali's line, whether it was Corrali, Nordstrom, Achari, or play against the other team's top line? And we saw that a lot last year, and that eases some of the burden. It frees the Bergeron line up to be a little bit more offensive, you know, and they're going to not go against that top line mm-hmm. night in and night out. So there's another way that you can try to manage some of it. And I think, you know, obviously you don't have Achari anymore, and Nordstrom not ready to start the season. So who's going to fill in that fourth line? Because it became a very big role for the Bruins last season.
Circling back to Bergeron, if memory serves, I don't think he played a single preseason game last year.
I should add Wagner in that too.
So Bergeron didn't play a single preseason game last year, and I'm sure we were probably wondering, okay, what is it going to look like once he starts? It looked pretty good. 32 goals in 65 games and 79 points.
But that, you know, I mean, how many games?
65.
I mean, it's, I don't want to say, I mean, look, I don't want to make it sound like the guy's, you know, pushing 40. I mean, he's definitely got some good years left in him. But, you know, that actually might have helped a little bit last year in him playing 65 games instead of 80 games or 82 games.
Probably didn't help in November. But it helped in April and May when you were able to sort of get.
No, but it helped. We talked about the injuries last season, how, you know, you have to face some adversity, and they had to deal with a lot of the injuries, and other guys got elevated roles and they stepped up and they played well, and how that, you know, that makes you a better team down the road. You know, we compared it to Tampa. Tampa had nothing all season. You know, Hedman got hurt late in the year, but they had no injuries all season. They just cruised. And then all of a sudden they hit a little bit of adversity and they weren't able to overcome it. Now, Hedman's injury had a lot to do with that, but still, you know, whether that's the sole reason or not, but I think as long as you can keep your head above water during some of those injuries, you're going to face them. There's no way around it. They went deep into the playoffs last year, and it seems like they faced it every year, the injury-wise, and you're going to have them. So that's why it's important to have that pipeline. 12 different defensemen played last year. You know, I mean, there was a game in Dallas last year, you know, I can't remember the exact number. I think there were four rookie defensemen playing. I know they don't like to use the word rookie. Four first-year defensemen playing. But, you know, I mean, that's – but they acquitted himself well. Clifton was one of them. That was his first game.
And that's what teams always say is, oh, okay, well, what did you learn about your team, you know, when you went through this stretch with all the injuries? You know what? One thing you learned is Connor Clifton is a valuable component in your system. So much so that he could be in the opening night lineup.
And so was
Camper in Dallas,
for that matter.
Yes.
You know, Camper came in. When he was asked to play minutes, he played him. He played him well. You know, so, I mean, for the most part. And it's, you need those guys. They might not, you know, start the season out on the ice, but you're going to need them at some point.
That Dallas game, I think that was like, it was a Grizzlick-John Moore pairing. I think it was something like that. And then Moore got injured in the first period, and that was the end of that. And he was like, oh, okay, well, now you're down to this. Yeah, so it's important, and to Bob's point and to Judd's point, if Clifton doesn't get in those games last year, is he what he was in the playoffs for you? Probably not, right? It's a different situation.
He's a different guy, though. I mean, he probably could have handled it. You know, the other guys might get over. You know, they said that about him. He said nothing is going to bother him. He just plays.
you know, the press
so
box
might be the exception rather than the rule.
The press box is not working right now. It's under construction at the TD Garden. So we're in the sports deck. So you got a really close look at Connor Clifton. He is chaos on the ice, and it's awesome. Like, the way he just goes at people and at plays is so much fun to watch. So yes, he is a different, he's a different cat.
So the D in that Dallas game, Zboril, Lauzon, Krug, Kampfer, Grizzlick, Clifton.
Yeah. Wow. And then Colorado, was it, so they played Colorado the game before, I think, right? And they
That's
lost
when Chara got
and,
hurt.
And they lost Moore, I think, too, in that game as well.
And then they lost Bergeron in the Dallas game, which is where the Bruins will open up off the hit that Radek Foxa laid on him. And he still played the rest of the game.
That's right. I remember Krug was real upset about that.
Before we let you go, overall level of confidence as they get ready to open up this year?
Pretty good. I really think that they're still the second or third best team in their division. Florida, I think, has improved, but I still like what the Bruins have. Going back to what I said earlier, when you have strong center play and you have good goaltending, you can compete. And this team has always competed under Cassidy. Since that switch, they have the second best record in the NHL. Only Tampa's been better. So barring, you know, everything going to hell and all these guys getting hurt all year long, they should be in there. They really should be in the mix of that second or third seed in the Atlantic Division. I still like what they have. If they can keep Tuukka fresh, I think that bodes well for their postseason. Yet again, that's the biggest difference with this team is that if they can manage their guys, manage Chara, manage Bergeron, manage the workload, they should be there and they should be impactful. I know that people are panicking saying the cup window is closed. I was a little bit one of them after game seven. The hurt was deep, I will admit. But I think that this roster is built to either tinker on the fly or to add to it, maybe not as big as they have in years past, but they have the options to still be competitive, what they've always been under Bruce Cassidy.
Thanks for coming in.
Anytime,
good have,
guys.
Good
Thanks
to have you on board
me.
With
Appreciate
us.
Appreciate it.
Ty Anderson's going to be joining us weekly here on 98.5, the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We will get Sports Hub headlines. We've got another hour still to come. We will get into more of the roster decisions coming up, and I want to talk a little bit about where Torrey Krug is going to fit on this team in the future as well. A lot of discussion about him as the McAvoy and Carlo contracts got taken care of. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show season premiere.
Black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
Hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Back for another season from 9 until 11 every Saturday here on the Sports Hub. 617-779-0985. We take your calls talking about the Bruins roster as they get ready for their final preseason game of the year today, 3 o'clock over at the Garden. These guys will have the call of that. And then Thursday night, they get started with a four-game Western road trip. Dallas and Arizona and Vegas and Colorado on the way back and then back here. It's like a 2 weeks from today, I think, is the home opener, right? Or two 12. Weeks from tonight against New Jersey. So a lot still that we have not talked about. We were talking earlier, guys, about the signings of McAvoy and Carlo, and Ty kind of talked about what he thought it might have taken and that they managed to get both those guys in under that. Torrey Krug's status has been kind of an ongoing storyline around this organization with a lot of people over the last couple of years about, you know, can you afford to keep him here long-term? What's it going to take to get him locked up? Because he's got a skill set that teams really value. And, you know, how important he is to your team, especially on the power play, but also just as a regular defenseman as well. He had some comments back a few weeks ago. He was asked about the potential of taking a hometown discount to stay here. And he seemed to be on board with that, as at least to a point, in saying that, you know, it's something that I've talked to my agent about, that I am interested in, that if Boston wants to keep me here, I'd like to be here, and that maybe I'd be willing to take a little bit less. Now, some people's versions of a little bit less tend to vary a little bit. So we don't know exactly how much that means, but how important do you guys think it is with the depth that they've got at the position, but this, in particular the skill set that this player has, how important is it for them to try and get something done with him long term?
Well, if you value the player, which I believe they do, then you want to make sure you're doing everything you can to keep him. I think he's such a valuable part of this team. The power play is such a weapon for them. I know that they'd like to improve in some other areas, but I think Torrey Krug, even in last year's playoff, the compete level that he has night in and night out during the playoffs was amazing. I mean, he plays hard all the time, but, you know, when you saw what he was able to do, and him and Carlo were very good in that playoff run, all playoffs. So I think that, you know, if you're taking that and then coupling it with the fact that his offensive ability to run the power play and to make plays and the movement that they have in the offensive zone and the ability to, you know, come up through the neutral zone making plays, you know, when he's not out there, I know that Grizzly can do the job, and I know that McAvoy can do the job and are getting better at it, but Krug's pretty polished offensively. And the way that they work off of one another, it's just such a valuable tool for this team. I don't see how you can not, unless you envision somebody, whether it's McAvoy or Grizzly, becoming that offensively, then maybe you look to part ways. Because if you can't afford him, sure, is what I'm saying. But if that part of the game is so important right now, and that first power play unit works so well together, that you do whatever you can to make sure he's there.
It's going to be tricky for Don Sweeney to be able to figure this one out, both what are the dollars, what is the term, and then, you know, as Bob alluded to, what are you going to get from the other defensemen? Take a side, Krug. What do you get from them as far as their transition?
I think Grizzly has done a good job of filling in when Krug has been injured, but it's not quite the same.
It's not at the same level. I mean, like you said, if you envision that it could approach that same level, then maybe it gives you a different thinking, but that's asking a lot.
I don't know if that player is in their system. Not that I know of. So that's where, I mean, you take him out of that power play, you know, maybe they can sustain it for a little while, but I don't think it's the long-term sustainability that they have. It's such a valuable weapon.
And the power play runs through him, and it's been an elite power play here for the last few years because he's been the quarterback on it. You're going to change the way, if he's not there, it changes. The second unit, you know, just take a look at the second unit, so it operates differently. That power play, in essence, runs through David Krejci. The first power play unit,
and they use two defensemen on the second unit, or they have. We'll see what they do this year, but it's McAvoy and Grizzly usually.
But it's going to be tricky just based on the offense that Krug can provide, what he means to your power play, what he means to the room, and then last year, watching him take a step forward with some of the details defensively in playing that role and taking pride in that role. Not that he didn't before, but it was so noticeable in some of the matchups that Bruce Cassidy and Kevin Dean put him up against in the playoffs, against Justin Williams or against Josh Anderson or in the Leafs series or in the final series against the St. Louis Blues, playing with Brandon Carlo. I think you can make an argument that they were the Bruins' best D pair throughout the playoffs.
I'm glad both of you guys brought that up, because that's something that a lot of people point to with Torrey Krug over the years and say, okay, he's an offensive defenseman, but, you know, is he, liability is not the right word, but, you know, does he do enough at his own end? I think the last year in the playoffs, we saw what he's capable of as a defensive defenseman. We all know what he brings to the table on the power play and as a guy who can distribute the puck and even score a little bit, but it's, you know, what does he bring to the table defensively? And last year we got a real good look at that, especially in the postseason. And at the most physical time of year, a guy who's not a big imposing defenseman showed that he's not shy about playing a physical game.
No, I mean, and it wasn't, you know, he always competes, but he that level went up. I mean, that level went up, and I think it helped Carlo. I think that they helped each other throughout that playoff run, and not just the finals, throughout the run. So, you know, they're going to have other questions. You know, is Chara back next year? Mm-hmm. You know, who's ready to kind of step in? Zaboro, left shot defenseman. Lozon, left shot defenseman. Vakanainen, left shot defenseman. You know, Lozon has played pretty well, Zabora, I think, is still with the team. Is that correct? Vaakanainen got sent down. So, you know, these are your next wave of lefty, and that also has to be taken into consideration, you know, where you think your team is. And but the type of players, I haven't seen, you know, Zabora and Vaakanainen played the other day, and we watched there's the power play stuff, just talking about the power play. But having the ability to know when to give a guy a pass, draw players to you by moving one way or another, and then make that pass at the right time on the tape to enter the zone. And even when you're in the zone, just to make those smart plays up high. They didn't have a Torrey Krug in the lineup, and it was so noticeable. And I'm not saying he's the only guy that can do it, sure. But I'm talking about they had some of those younger guys in the lineup, and they're not anywhere near ready for that yet.
I just think the other thing with a guy like Torrey Krug, I think he wants to be here. I think the Bruins want him here. It's just a factor of, okay, let's work out the term and the dollar figures. And then based on that, you're going to have to make some adjustments to your salary cap. But I think that there's any time that you have a willingness from both player and management, something's going to get done.
I don't think there's any question they want him. It's just it's got to fit numbers-wise. It's just that's the reality of it right now. And there's a number of guys that need to be signed next year. What's the cap going to look like? You know, so is Chara back? There's, you know, how you handle the salary cap moving forward. We were looking at other teams, Judd. Who do we look at? We were just looking at Buffalo's roster.
They have eight skaters under contract for next year. Everybody else is already at the cap. Yeah. They're over the cap right now, right?
Right there, whatever it is, yeah.
You know, just from the standpoint of the defensemen that they've got either on the roster or who are going to be in Providence. You know, that has been a hallmark of this team over the last few years, the depth defensively, and it has been tested, you know, whether it be in the regular season, as you were talking about that game in Dallas last year, or whether it's during the playoffs. Where's your level of confidence on that depth as you've gotten to see these guys a little bit more? Some of these guys who have had some spot duty in the NHL, you mentioned Vaakanainen, who we got a real brief glance at last year before he got hurt early in the season. A guy like Connor Clifton, a guy like Zboril, like
Jeremy Lauzon,
another one. Like guys, you know, how many of these guys do you think are capable of being at the NHL level for a significant amount of time at this point?
I mean, this year or moving forward?
This year.
This year? I mean, Lauzon would come to mind. I don't think what I saw from Vaakanainen would constitute that. Not this training camp. Mm-hmm. Zboril, you know, Senishin. We just haven't seen enough. You know, even I think Frederick was better the other night, right, Judd? I mean, we talked about that. You know, some of the younger guys kind of stepped up the other night and were better than they had been in camp. So not a lot of them right now. There's a few. I mean, Clifton's most likely going to be here. I don't know how that would go, actually, you know, when Kevin Miller finally gets back, you know, how that would work out. And because then you're going to have five right defensemen. Mm-hmm. So, is that correct? Yeah, we would have five with Kampfer and Clifton. So that would be a battle over there. But, you know, injuries occur throughout the season. So they have a way of working things out, right? Things have a way of working themselves out. Through camp, though, some of the guys that you mentioned, I haven't seen
not a lot enough. Of jumping, not a lot of guys who are Stanikin standing out.
Needs some time down in the minors. Mm-hmm. He needs some time down in Providence, I think. I really believe that. Lauko looked pretty good. You know, that game that we saw. I mean,
he had some jump there. And some energy.
Yeah. So he would be a guy that I'd say maybe. But I'd have to see how they developed a little bit more in Providence.
And
I haven't seen every preseason game, Ryan.
Sure.
So don't, you know, it's, you know, I've only seen three preseason games. We didn't do the other ones. So
well, point being, I haven't heard, and granted, it's been, you know, I think, again, kind of coming off of where they're coming off of, it's been, the training camp has felt a little differently this year.
Well, here's the thing. They came in knowing that there weren't many jobs.
Well,
open,
that's what I was going to bring up, is that there's not, you know, it's not a lot of open spots.
I don't know
spots.
If that affects them.
Does that, you're leading me exactly where I wanted to go. Like, does that enter into it that these guys, you know,
they know they're
just kind of expected
Providence.
They're going to Providence either way. So, you know, we don't
could
see
play,
the best
it could
out
play
of
it. Yeah. And I think the message got through the other night, though, and Judd had talked about it during the game where, you know, Bruce Cassidy was saying, look, we've already told these guys, realistically, there's not many spots on this team, or if any, really, to make it. But you're playing to be that first call-up. Mm-hmm. And I think the message, without having it actually said, but I think the message the other night was to the team, to the players. I think Cassidy and the coaching staff or management said, look, if you want to be called up first, you got to step up a little bit more here. This is your last chance. This is your last game before we're making cuts, significant cuts. And I saw it. I thought the compete level was a lot higher in that game.
From a lot of the younger guys. I don't think there's any question. Yeah. One of the guys that, just to circle back, is to a guy like Anders Bjork, you know, where he begins and what's the best place for him. Bruce Cassidy hinted earlier in camp that he felt, you know, hey, maybe it's a good idea for him to go down, regain his confidence, regain his trust, get an opportunity to play a lot of games in Providence, and then we'll see where that leads him. Obviously, you've got some different calculus based on who's healthy and who's not to start the season for the Bruins, but that's something that bears watching. But the roster's going to shuffle around from what we're talking about at the beginning on October 3rd and what it's going to end like in early April.
Well, and we've talked about that a lot over the years about, you know, is it better for, especially when you've got a younger guy, is it better that he's in Providence playing every night, or is it better that he's, you know, watching two-thirds of the games from the ninth floor? It's like, you know, you'd rather have Providence. That guy on the ice.
Providence, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I think about a guy like Matt Grzelcyk, just how different the camp is for him this year versus the last 2 years. Last year, heading into the season, I don't think anybody figured that he would be in the top six to start the season. Torrey Krug gets hurt at the tail end of the preseason, and all of a sudden, not only is he elevated, but he becomes a fixture in your top six. So it can change, and it can change very quickly. And if you're a young player, are you ready for the moment?
617-779-0985 as we continue here on the season premiere of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Shoots and left, splashed up the glove, take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Center fired, they score!
On 98.5, the Sports Hub, and streaming on the Sports Hub app.
.985 The Sports Hub. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here on the season premiere of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985 if you want to jump in with us. Billy Jaffe will join us coming up at the final half hour of the show today. We'll get his thoughts on Bruins camp so far, but also some things going on around the NHL. We'll talk about who got better, who got worse this offseason, what's the division going to look like. May actually be better than it was last year. Is that even possible? But we'll get into all that coming up. A guy whose name came up briefly earlier when you were talking about the game the other night, but we haven't really talked much about, is David Backes. We saw some rather interesting developments with David Backes last year in the second half of the season, as you know, he had that kind of famed sit down with Bruce Cassidy. Ended up getting into a few fights after that. We saw a bit of a different guy, but at the same time, still was at important times not a necessity in the lineup for this team. Obviously, that's significantly magnified by the contract, which some people thought they might try and find a way to jettison that contract over the offseason. They didn't. He's in camp at $6 million per for the next couple of years. What does his role look like on this team going forward?
It'll depend on him. If he plays the way he did the other night, it's going to be a good role for this team. You think about what he has accomplished in the NHL and how important of a player he's been throughout his career, captain of the St. Louis Blues. Now you finally make it to the finals, and you're playing against your old team, and you're not in the lineup for the clinching games. I mean, that is a lot to take in for a proud guy, for a well-respected guy. And what he's done here, from what we've heard in the offseason, and what he's looked like on the ice, last couple of games, especially the last game, it's been good, really good. So, you know, whatever he did, there was, you know, whatever, figure skating coach or whatever it was, you know, to try to improve that skating to get there, you know, it looks like it's shown. And if his if his game the other night is any indication of, and I don't get too far ahead of it. I mean, it's one game, you know, or only a couple games. So let's see what it looks like when the puck drops on Thursday night in Dallas. But if he's able to bring that, then his role is going to be magnified on the team instead of going the other direction.
The work ethic, the willingness will always be there. We'll see if the skating improved. I think that's a good sign. But can he see and make plays? I think that that's what it's going to come down to in the minutes that he's going to play. If he's able to do that, he's in the lineup. But he was briefed on it. He and Bruce Cassidy had another conversation during the offseason that there's going to be competition on the right side once the season begins, and you're seeing it right now in camp.
How much, I mean, look, we know that that was part of it, right? That the game has continued to get faster, you know, and David Backes at times he looks slow. You put in the work, obviously, and it sounds like he did, you know, working with skating coaches and whatever over the offseason. How much can you improve that at age 35, I guess, is the question. How much quicker can you really get at that point in your career?
Can you sustain it?
Right.
And, you know, and just so it's not one game or two games, and, you know, do you play back-to-back, so do you have the legs on both nights? You know, there's a lot of things that will factor into that. But right now, he's fresh, and he looks good.
I think a lot of it, listen, yes, the game is faster, and speed is a big part of it, but how much do you have the puck? That's what it boils down to. Nobody ever talks about Patrice Bergeron being a guy with blazing speed. But you know what? He's always got the puck. And if he doesn't have it, he gets it back quickly. So those are things that David Backes has to somehow have. I don't think anybody's expecting him to turn into Patrice Bergeron. But if you're always chasing the play, you're going to look slower.
Let's talk a little bit about the fourth line. It has become so important to this team over the years to be able to roll four lines deep. We talked a little bit about the center position at that point, at that spot. Fourth line guys on this team, especially with the loss of Achari over the offseason, where do these guys fit in? How do they still have as big of a role on this team as you'd expect?
I that's the hope. And it probably starts with Corrali in the middle, Wagner on the right. Nordstrom's not ready to go. Otherwise, he'd be the guy on the left. And I think that those three guys, you know, can be a valuable part of this team in the way that they check and the way that they forecheck and play and make it life miserable for the other team's top lines.
And the way Bruce Cassidy likes to coach.
Yeah. So without Nordstrom there, that leaves another question of who's going to start there on that fourth line. But
that's hopefully a temporary question. I mean, that's not a, but that's a, you know, as you said, it kind of fits with what Bruce Cassidy wants to do with this team. And we saw that identity. We've seen that identity. How big of a loss is Achari with what you still have?
Well, you love the way that he competed and you know how hard he played. I think I don't want to make it sound like guys like that, I believe, are replaceable, though. And you have to be able to replace those guys. When Riley Nash, you know, had a good year and then moves on to play, you know, gets a contract offer to play somewhere else, he priced himself out of Boston there. When Tim Schaller did it, it's the same way. You know, you like those guys. You wanted them in your lineup, but now they're going to make more money. They're going to make more money than maybe what the fourth line you have envisioned them making. Sure. So when Achari was up for contract, he's earned it. I hope that he's replaceable, but I do believe he is. He played hard. He was well respected. He was liked in that locker room. But the reality of it is, you can. Replacing a fourth line guy is a lot easier than replacing a 30 goal scorer, right? So,
sure.
So, yeah, I don't want to make his role sound diminished or. But
no, I think we understand what you're saying. That look, these are the decisions that it comes down to, right? You'd love to keep the entire squad together, but you can't do it.
You got to move on when they earn their money.
Yeah, the economics just don't allow for it. I mean, we were just talking about Torrey Krug, and you know, you certainly want to keep him, but it eventually comes down to dollars and cents, and who's willing to do what.
And you know, people become casualties of it. But if they've earned it and they're going to get money from somewhere else, then good for them.
Absolutely. No, I don't think anybody begrudges a guy like that for making what he can make, because he certainly has worked hard for it. All right, we've got one more half hour to go here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, and we will spend that talking to Billy Jaffe of Nesson coming up next after the Sports Hub headlines.
This is a black and gold freight train. Freight train. Freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub, and the Sports Hub Hockey Show season premiere. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers has taken his leave of us. Go get ready for the afternoon game today. Bruins and Blackhawks, or some semblance of the Blackhawks, going to be on the ice.
The Rockford Ice Hogs.
Yes. We'll be there today for the final preseason game of the year. Bruins are expected to play much of their regulars, right? This will be, you know, this is some of these guys haven't played. We mentioned earlier, Patrice Bergeron hasn't played yet. The hope is that he's going to be able to go today. And so
they put out their roster.
Okay.
So Bergeron, Bjork, Coyle, DeBrusk, Cameron Hughes, Kuhlman, Corrali, Lindholm, Marchand, Pastrnak, Richie, Wagner up front, Carlo, Chara, Clifton, Krug, McAvoy, Zboril on the back, Lagesse and Rask.
So not too far off of what you'll see opening night. So from that perspective, you get a chance to see the Bruins in their final tune-up, and Judd and Bob will have the call for you at 3 o'clock here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Pleased to welcome back Billy Jaffe of Nesson. He joins us each week on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline to go around the NHL. What's going on, Billy?
Just making my preseason debut today as well. Don't know what to expect.
I mean, we've been talking about it all morning, but, you know, it's the season snuck up quick on a lot of us. Are you ready to go?
You know, we'll see. I've been in hockey mode, youth hockey mode for a while. Am I ready for the NHL season? Sure. I mean, you know, look, preseason is what it is. There's a lot of people running around, both on and off the ice. There's a lot of people around the team looking for stuff. And I just kind of hang on the peripheral a bit and watch and see. And I get, you know, I wait for opening day. It's always interesting. The offseason, it never, you know, it seems like it's going to be long, and then it's nowhere near long enough when it's all said and done. Yet, now I'm interested. I am. I think it's a real good product that we're going to have here. I'm probably repeating. I've caught some of the show today, but I'm guessing I'm repeating a lot of what Judd and Bob and you have said, that there's going to be some ups and downs. That's normal. There's going to be some trials and tribulations. A lot's going to be predicated on the health of the team, and also I think the development of that next second group, the DeBrusk, the Coils, the Heinens, et cetera. How much do they step up? But otherwise, I think if all's good, I think they have a heck of a team. So once they get going, RJ, I'll be really excited. This is me being excited right now on September 28th, though.
Well, we know. I mean, it's a pretty similar team to the one that was on the ice at the end of the playoffs last year. You know, but we know how difficult a road this is. I mean, it's not just you throw the pucks out there and the best teams always are there at the end. So, you know, what's your level of confidence that the Bruins have another significant run in them?
I think I have a high level of confidence. I'm sitting here, though, with what seems like a very healthy team. I know we have the Bergeron lingering, you know, perhaps, chronic issue. We'll see. You know, I think Krejci's going to be okay. We'll see. I heard you guys talking about it can be the verbal kiss of death when a certain coach tells everything's fine. No worries. Don't worry. He's all right. I do believe that he's fine, though. I think that this is a team that, with the leadership that they have, I think Bruce Cassidy and his staff do a beautiful job. I think they get this team. I think the respect between coach and players is significant. I think they're going to understand how to handle them even better. I have confidence in this team. With all that said, I mean, I had a heck of a lot of confidence in Tampa last year, and look what happened to them in the first round. You know, you never know, but all things being equal, health being the number one thing, and the development of some of these guys that I call the second-level guys, you know, the guys that I just mentioned, and there's more of them, too, the McAvoys, the Carlos, the Grizz, et cetera. If they continue to rise, if they ascend, then this team will continue to ascend, and I have a lot of confidence in them, fellas.
Well, I think the strength of the team is the way they defend, how solid their goaltending is, how deep they are on the back end, how strong they are down the middle up front. And anytime you're a team that is good defensively, you're going to give yourself an opportunity to win consistently night in and night out. And that's the identity of the group.
I'd agree. I mean, and that's that's pretty much been the identity of the Boston Bruins for decades now. You know, you go back to the Claude Julien era. I mean, that's when they were really known for their defensive stalwartness and a little bit differently than what they're doing right now systematically. But this is a team that now can skate as beautifully as many teams. You know, there's probably a few other, there are a few other teams that are faster position by position, but the Bruins, in the way that they are schooled now and instructed by their coaching staff led by Butch, play a very fast game, and their players that Donnie has brought in, you know, you look at a Clifton, you look at a Kuhlman, are significantly faster than some other players that are there. You know, I think the fact that they have, and I'm sure you guys have touched on this, They you could argue again they go into this season with the best goalie product in the league, you know, between Halak and Rask. Mm-hmm. You absolutely can, and that's so significant right there. And if those guys perform at the level that they're able to, and that we saw last year for probably 80, if not 90% of the season, this team will be in good stead. They'll be in good shape.
Well, let's talk about the rest of the league. Because we've been talking about the Bruins all morning long.
Yes, there's a lot to talk about.
No question.
This is also my first show, RJ. So, like, I always feel like I don't know crap this show. You know, I'm like, oh, God, what are they going to ask me? You know, it's like I said, it's preseason for me, too. So here we go.
Well, most notably, the Toronto Maple Leafs got Mitch Marner locked up for just under $11 million.
Yes.
Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Nylander, now accounting for over $40 million just for those four guys. That's pretty much half the salary cap this year. How is this sustainable? How do they pull this off up in Toronto?
I don't know. They've got those four guys, you know, all that money, the gross national, it's bigger than some of the GDP of some small countries out there. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable what they've done. We know that they have the money with the Maple Leafs Sports and Entertainment, MLSE, you know, they print money up there for that team. But with regard to the cap, it isn't sustainable. Yet the feeling is from the people that I've spoken with up there and just, you know, reading between the lines of what Dubas and Babcock have have been talking about, I don't think any of it matters, RJ, if they win a cup in the next 2 years or so. And I think they can keep it together for 2 years, I don't think a third. You know, we know they're gonna make a move. Will that be, I'm never gonna trade you, Willie Nylander, goodbye, we've traded you, Willie Nylander? You know, I mean, that was just a verbal promise, not a written promise. They're gonna have to make some move, but I think if they can find a way to win a cup, in the next 1 to 2, I'll give them 3, but let's say next 1 to 2 seasons, I don't know if they care. I don't know. I think they're going to say, hey, we'll just deal with that then when we have to deal with it. But right now, because of the salary cap and because of how quickly players develop and can produce, and I think you see that significantly with Toronto, with the Matthews, the Marners, et cetera, I think some teams are just saying, screw it, let's win. We win, we're over the cap, we'll make a big trade, and we'll do what we have to do. But if we don't win, and you know, winning a dynasty is no longer winning back-to-back. It's winning every 2 or 3 years now, winning a Stanley Cup. So I think they're just saying, look, we'll win, we'll do what we got to do that way. They'll deal with it that way.
Well, I think the Leafs, the two big questions coming in is, okay, what is that reconstituted blue line going to look like? And then up front, the one thing that was not addressed that was sort of an issue for this team, especially in the playoffs, who's going to get inside consistently up and down that lineup at forward and do the dirty work to score goals? Because they didn't add anybody in that area.
No, and Zach Hyman's still injured right now. There's no doubt about it. I think they felt, Judd, that their biggest need was on the blue line. And while I'm not disagreeing with you that that is a need, their defense sucked at times. And they added Tyson Barrie. They added Cody Ceci. Adding Ben Harper is a big, strong person. I don't find him to be a huge upgrade on what they had, but he's a depth guy there. But I think they feel with the, you know, the rise of Morgan Rielly, the continued rise of Morgan Rielly, adding Tyson Barrie, adding a solid 5-6, we'll call him Cody Ceci, I think they felt that was their biggest need. I think also, Judd, and then again, I'm not arguing with you, I'm just saying, I think they felt getting rid of Nazem Kadri was an enormous relief for them, too. I think they just felt that after his boneheadedness the last 2 years in the playoffs, what led to, you could easily make the contention that his suspensions were a major part of this team losing to the Bruins. Not everything, but a major factor in it. I think they feel it's addition by subtraction there. But yes, to your original comment slash question, I guess, is who's going to play on the inside? I think that they're relying on some of their, well, some of their other guys. Maybe Matthews gets a little more to the inside. Maybe, you know, Hyman continues to do his role, but he is what he is. Maybe one of their other guys, their Johansson, and Kapanen. I don't know. I'm throwing names out there that maybe they're hoping continue to rise up more the same way the Bruins hope their young core develop.
Last year, the Tampa Bay Lightning were far and away the best team in the regular season, and then flamed out magnificently when it got to the postseason. What do you see out of that team this year? Are they still the class of the league?
I don't know if they're the class of the league. I mean, I still think that they're the best team in the East for the regular season. You know, they have some big deals. They signed Vasilevskiy to that mammoth contract. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of, let's see now, let's really see, let's make sure that this is worth it from the outside hockey world looking in. I don't mind the chance that they took on Kevin Shattenkirk adding to the blue line. Remember, their power play could use a little bit of help, and as good as it is, I think it'll help on the back end there. Their goaltending situation is, after Vasilevskiy's a little curious, what do they have, like 17 goalies now under contract? Something ridiculous. Like, I think it's literally five or six guys. I mean, between Domingue and Mike Condon, both practicing in Syracuse, yet on NHL deals, and they signed Curtis McElhinney to a two-year deal. You know, they got rid of JT Miller. They got rid of Anton Strahlman. I believe Girardi, I think he announced his retirement. Or if it's not official. Okay, did he? Okay, so he announced that too. And then Callahan, even though he got traded, Ryan Callahan announced his retirement too. In fact, he's going to be working in the TV biz. Good dude, and he'll be good on TV. I still think they're a heck of a team, fellas. I do. I'm curious to see how much of that humble pie and chip on their shoulder that they have. I never thought they were overly cocky last year. I didn't. I just feel, you know, they steamed their way, or they powered their way through the regular season, fellas, and it had an issue come playoff time. You know, Judd, your point about who's going to play interior hockey for Toronto could probably be thrown to Tampa as well. That could be their big issue. Now, they added Pat Maroon. I don't know come playoff time if that's enough, though, for interior hockey. We'll have to wait and see. I still think they're a hell of a team. They got Point signed to a good deal for a couple of years. He's dominant-type player. They're going to, you know, I'm really curious to see if they put as much stock in the regular season as they did last year. That will be interesting to me.
What makes Tampa so good is how good the players beyond the core are. And how they contribute on a regular basis. As far as cockiness, I do think that carried over into the playoffs. And because of that, they were not ready for a Columbus team, plus the fact that they experienced no duress during the season, no adversity. And then when they finally hit it in the playoffs, they coughed it up.
Well, I think that's part to my comment about if, you know, how much stock do they put in the regular season, in the sense of maybe they try some different things that maybe will be a little uncomfortable at times during the regular season, and that does provide them with, I guess, for lack of a better term, adversity or a challenge, Judd. Maybe they play their backup goalie a little bit more instead of Vasilevskiy. I don't have his number in front of me, but playing as much. You know, he played a ton 2 years ago. I don't think he played as much, but he still plays a lot. But yet, you've got this mammoth contract that he signed for, 70-something million over, 8 years. So maybe they'll play. We'll have to wait and see, but I still like this team. It'll be interesting. This is last year. Remember, at the end of the summer, Stevie Yzerman left, and then he was still around, but not around. Breezeball took over the team, but this is Breezeball's first full summer, and then also his first training camp, et cetera, as GM of this team, and he has put his mark on it by bringing in some certain players. I'm curious to see how he is in season, if he's a little bit different as well, if this team needs a little something different.
Another team in the division that, they weren't shy about spending some money over the offseason, Florida Panthers. Sergei Bobrovsky, of course, gets the 7-year, $70 million contract. Is this a team on the come in the Atlantic Division?
They better be. If they're not, they're really a mess down there. If not now, and I don't mean actually just this year, but in the next 5 years, then when? Then when is this team going to, especially with the addition of the coach, Joel Quenneville. You know, he's the number two overall winningest coach in the NHL. Here is a guy that, you know, brings so much presence. Judd knows him incredibly well. I know him well. Judd worked with him for many years in Chicago, and this guy is a winner, no doubt about it. He's bringing his ways, and his way is his way, and they need that. In Florida, especially defensively. You know, this is a team that has some really good pieces to it. We always talk about Barkov being one of the best lesser known. He's not an unknown, but lesser known or lesser discussed players by the average fan. But he's an outstanding player. The question is, what else around him? Does the, you know, can the Trocheck, Vinny Trocheck, who I think is a hell of a player, you know, continue to rise? Do you see their defense get solid or more solid? Is Ekblad, the young stud, become a young stud again? They brought in Anton Strahlman. I thought too many years for Strahlman, but whatever. They didn't ask me. This is a team, you know, when you talk about needs, Luongo, when he was healthy, was actually pretty good, but his body just broke down eventually by the end of the year. The Bobrovsky deal, to me, I don't know if you guys agree. I mean, that's a ton of money for that guy, who is an amazing goalie, but $10 million a year to that position. It makes a splash. There's no question about it. Without the income tax down there, that's closer to $11 million a year. I just thought it was too much money. I do. I just to tie up in that spot. But again, they obviously disagree with my opinion.
Well, they're definitely deeper. I think having Quenneville there to institute his system and the way they want to play and how responsible he demands his teams to be from the blue line to the back, I think it will make a difference. I think the one thing, since you mentioned Sergei Bobrovsky, can you name his backup? Because that was part of their undoing last year. Just part is that James Reimer, when they had to turn to him, he couldn't carry the weight. Sam Montembeau is their backup, making $700,000. He played
Isn't that a pen company?
Exactly.
I hope Bob wants to play about 75 games this year.
Well, and he's going to be asked to play the bulk of the games. And then I think that is going to be the big question. You know, you're paying a guy 10 schmil a year. You got to be playing at least in the high 60s, close to 70 games a year. And that's a lot to ask for a team if they have Stanley Cup aspirations.
Yeah, and a team that at times has been, you know, wide open and defensively has had issues. And yes, Joel likes his D to play a certain way. I will say this. I do think that they've got some nice mobile pieces on their back end. Does that mean that they're going to get Joel's system right away? We'll have to wait and see. He loves the quick ups. He likes it. He doesn't want his D, you know, going, taking it back too far. You saw that for years, especially when a guy like Duncan Keith was at his prime, Judd. You witnessed how fluid of a system it was getting it up to those great forwards of Hawkshead. Can they replicate that in Florida? Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But I don't have the number in front of me, but you don't see goalies playing 70 plus games and going on to the Stanley Cup, let alone just far in the playoffs off. And it's happened, of course. Marty Brodeur comes to mind. I believe the last goalie to lead the league in games played and everything to go to a cup was Jonathan Quick in 14. Don't hold me to that if I'm wrong, but I think I'm right on that. Remember, this is still preseason for me too. But it's going to be a big ask. There's no doubt about it. And I know Bobrovsky wanted to go there. He got his wish, and now let's see if his wish can become a dream and it become reality, that they become a real good team down there.
Billy, appreciate the time as always. Great to have you back for another season, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You got it, fellas. Good to be listening with you, or listening to you, and then back on with you again. It's always fun. The official, unofficial start of the season for us.
All right, Billy Jaffe joins us each week here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Judd, always a pleasure.
Great to be back with you.
Have fun with the call today. Make sure you know all those Blackhawks prospects this afternoon, and we'll look forward to opening night on Thursday. Enjoy the trip.
Sounds good.
All right, that'll do it for this edition. The premier edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show for the 2019-20 year. We'll be back again next Saturday from 9 until 11. Stick around for Gasper and Murray next.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.